You are listening to Friends of the Earth Europe's show at Via World Radio. Hello and welcome to Real World Radio Europe, a show bringing together what's going on in the 30 plus national member groups of Friends of the Earth Europe. We're the European branch of the world's largest grassroots environmental and social justice network, Friends of the Earth International. And today we're going to bring you to Spain, to Girona, where the first energy democracy convergence happened in September.
Welcome to the Energy Democracy Convergence. Here we have about 80 people from all over Europe, from Romania to Ireland and from Finland to Turkey. And we've been talking in the last days about people taking the energy system into their own hands. And we've heard a lot of inspiring stories. We've heard a lot of struggles. And we're just going to go a little deeper in this podcast into hearing how citizens are already taking that energy system into their own hands. And this conversation will be hosted by myself, Molly Walsh, a renewables campaigner at Friends of the Earth Europe, and by Hector de Prado, the climate and energy campaigner with Amigos de la Tierra. And we're sitting here with four guests, and I'll allow them now to introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Lavinia Steinfort from Transnational Institute, a research and advocacy institute in Amsterdam.
Hi, my name is Ángel Matilla, and I work with a sustainable mobility cooperative called SoMobilitat.
My name is Dirk van Sint-Jan. I'm the president of the European Federation of Renewable Energy Cooperatives, RESCOP.eu, based in Belgium.
Hello, I'm Oleg Sabotar, a climate and energy campaigner at Friends of the Earth Hungary.
Some of you come from pretty far away. I would like to know from you what brought you here, what drew your attention about this gathering. Maybe we can start with Angel.
Well, as part of SoMobilitat and as a member of SoMenergia and also the citizen of Catalonia, I considered this opportunity as a big chance of actually getting to meet other people who think in a really similar way about the, let's say, energy democracy matter, which is something that it's actually really important for both SoMenergia and SoMobilitat, and it's something that has been in our minds for quite some time. Therefore, what actually drew me here was to know what's the different opinions and different mindsets all around other places in the world.
RESCOP and myself, we're present because we co-organize these convergence. For us, this is an opportunity to, as energy cooperatives, to meet with campaigners like people from Friends of the Earth are. We've been working together before, and for us, this is an opportunity to a bit refresh our thinking about things. And I've heard a lot of interesting things. I think we will work more on the commons about wind and sun as a common good. So we should deepen our ideas about this.
I've been working on the community energy program since 3 years now. And I came here to get inspired by some really good examples of cooperatives and community initiatives, and to make a step forward in getting the energy democracy, to basically to learn how to make a good business model, how to get finance for these community initiatives. So basically just an info exchange about getting organized and community. Yeah, and I think the convergence has met my expectations nicely.
I came here because this convergence is a quite unique and first momentum to meet so many people from in Europe and also from Turkey, from other places, and hear stories and experiences that are crucial to understand how diverse the practices towards energy democracy are. And SDNI is co-hosting the mailing list and the energydemocracy.net website. It's crucial to hear the work on the ground and to think about how we can exchange those stories and advance this movement that is clearly already in different shapes existing in different countries and cities. So it's very promising to see there are so much overlap between the frameworks and the work, and we can learn so much in terms of energy as a commons, energy as a public service, energy that is run by communities, and how it relates to issues of degrowth. So it's such a rich focus that brings all our struggles together, I feel. So I'm very happy to be here.
Maybe we can hear a little bit about some of the initiatives that are happening. Engel, can you tell us about the Sol Mobilitat and what you're involved in?
Sol Mobilitat was born in June last year, 2016. And basically, we caught on the idea, what Som Energia had already started, to create a non-profit cooperative to provide service to the society. Of course, Som Energia took already one of the most important services that you can offer to the community, which is energy. But energy, as provided by Som Energia, is basically the electricity that you can get. And there are other forms of services that a community need, and other forms of energy that you are actually using as society. So a group of people in Mataró, which is in a city in the Catalan coast, decided to replicate the same concept that Som Energia was using for electricity distribution, but to offer a sustainable mobility option for the society. And so we were constituted as a cooperative, and the idea behind that, basically, I mean, our motto would be to strive towards a more sustainable mobility, and that would imply to offer all different kinds of services to make sure that happens. And as part of rescop.eu, actually we are in a, let's say, a smaller part of Rescop EU, which is called Rescop Mobility. Currently, Rescop Mobility has five different cooperatives in different countries in Europe. And under that umbrella, there was another cooperative in Belgium, which was already offering an electrical car sharing service. And we decided that that would be a proper way to start trying to change the mobility step by step.
Cool, that's a really interesting project. Alexa, maybe you'd like to tell a little bit the story of the straw bale housing initiative in Hungary.
Yes, as we are just sitting in a very nice round straw bale house, it's really inspirational. In Hungary, we have this straw bale network, which is a kind of cooperation between green NGOs and social NGOs, using straw bales to insulate or to form walls of the house, which basically provides a cheap and sustainable solution to energy poverty, especially for rural areas where people often lack the money and they waste a lot of energy. So these straw bale houses is a good alternative, and this network helps them to learn how to use this technique. And there are like trainings and all kind of workshops where they can actually build these houses. So it's also a community building element in it. And basically in these poor areas, it also provides an employment for people, because public benefit workers can be trained to build these insulations and make these houses. So it can be really beneficial for the local economy. Yeah, we promote this straw bale housing as a good local solution and an opportunity to energy transition.
Okay, this question is for Dirk, and I would like to know how a handful of people sitting around a kitchen table in a small town in Flanders got back in track an ancient water mill, and from there you establish EcoPower, which has a lot of members nowadays. Can you tell us a bit about the story, this wonderful story?
So EcoPower, we started in actually with we bought an old water mill. It had a turbine, and it was a national monument, so we were supposed to restore it. And we soon found that a not-for-profit organization has problems in raising money. So we one of the ideas of one of my neighbors was, why don't we set up a cooperative to raise the money? So it's a business, so we can look for members, shareholders. And that's what we did. So we started with 5 people, and in a year we had about 30 people and 2 million Belgian francs. And that sounds a lot. It's 2 million, but it's only 50,000 euros. And we encountered all kinds of problems, obstacles when you start producing electricity. The grid operator reacted that it costed money to put our energy on the grid instead of us receiving some money. So we were obliged to set up a sort of lobby organization. It's called Organisatie Duurzame Energie Vlaanderen. So we gathered professors, universities, high schools, NGOs were engaging in renewable energy. And we successfully lobbied the political parties. And so by the end of the 90s, so it took us some years, 8 years, we finally had a support mechanism so that in Flanders at least the wind turbines or solar panels were profitable. And then we got the opportunity of a city who was looking for a wind turbine developer to install 3 wind turbines on their territory. And for them it was important that their citizens could participate. So this was the ideal tender for us. We were a candidate. Also the big monopolist Electrabel was a candidate. But we won the tender because we offered the citizens of this city, Eeklo, 100% participation. And so we were given this opportunity, and we grew from a small cooperative of 30 people to one of 1,200 people. So this was a big step. And we produced electricity for more than 2,500 households. So there was some room to grow. And then 2 years later, the energy market in Flanders was liberalized due to a directive from Europe. And then our members made the decision in the General Assembly that we would become a supplier. This gave us a lot of headaches and grey hair. Some of us lost their hair. But finally, we were able to establish this supplier. And this really was a third start of our cooperative. We discovered that when you are able to supply your members with the electricity they produce with their wind turbines, that this attracts a lot of people. So once the wind turbines are installed, they come, and we were able to provide them with, let's say, the less expensive electricity they could get on the market. So people found us, and now we have grown in, let's say, 15 years, almost 15 years' time to a cooperative of more than 50,000 members, and we supply 1.5% of the Flemish households with their own green electricity. Yeah, we didn't know we started this in around this kitchen table. We would have probably not believed it, but it shows that if you are stubborn and you have a lot of energy, you can change laws. You can have a support mechanism if you really fight for it. Yeah.
Well, Lavinia, you have been doing some extensive research on municipalization, remunicipalization, other forms of democratization of the energy. This seems to be more and more a trend, it's becoming a trend all over Europe. Among all these cases you've been going through, can you share with us a particular one that inspired you and you would like to share with our...
Yes, we published the Reclaiming Public Services in this summer, in June. And this was a publication after more than 1.5 years of research with, over 10, 13 researchers, and next to TNI, 11 other organizations. And together we found out that there's this growing wave of remunicipalization, which means that privatized public services are failing, and that citizens and cities, and that citizens push their cities to deprivatize these services because they can do and run and own these services much better themselves. So we counted in total 835 cases that are happening across Europe, but also in across other continents. And we see that these remunicipalizations are a strategy towards energy democracy. So it's many water remunicipalizations, in total 267 and 311 energy remunicipalizations. And this often involves remunicipalizing the supply, but also the grid. And next to that, we also see important waste and recycling, transport and school canteens remunicipalizations, where, for example, the city of Grenoble has the aim to have 100% organic food in the school canteens, but also the city of Briançon is moving towards the zero waste strategy. And I think energy democracy is also connected to those transitions. And the energy, as I said before, is affecting all the spheres of our lives and of the community life we are part of. So it's very promising to see how cities, together with its citizens and together with the workers of these public companies, can run very efficiently and much cheaper these services and have a sustainable vision for the long run, so also for future generations. So many of these energy remunicipalizations are going together with more investments in renewables, more participation by the citizens, and that is very promising.
I think it's really exciting to hear about this like silent movement almost of remunicipalization of citizens taking their energy systems or taking them back. And I think one of the things we've been hearing about over the days here is how much is actually happening everywhere and how many plans people have for the future and for the next step. So I want to ask some of you what's going to be the next step for your organizations and your initiatives. Maybe I'll start with you. And what's next for Son Mobilitat?
So yeah, I think, I mean, these days, definitely, I've seen that there is a huge momentum, not only here, but actually happening all around, precisely empowering people all around the globe to, yeah, take back precisely their energy generation, not only energy, but actually everything that people consume. And I believe that's really related to the fact that in a time that we've reached, that we are visibly reaching limits of some resources in the earth, that we realize that the private way of handling things is definitely not addressing the needs of the people. But going back to your question, the next steps for Son Mobilitat, so as I said before, we are quite young and we are still trying to establish our core in the different members in all around Catalonia. And we have worked really hard to create a framework to provide this first car sharing service to all of them. And what we want to do is to expand now. We want to start growing in a similar way as Som Energia is doing. We want to address the different municipalities. We want to address the local groups. We want to see what are their needs. And we want to be able to, with the tools that we have created, to offer them tailored solutions for their mobility needs. And that's the dream that we have. And also, we would like to see our proposal replicated in other regions, not only in Spain, but in Europe. I mean, we are already seeing that in Rescop Mobility. We're seeing that already 5 cooperatives are offering these mobility services. And we strongly believe that we are creating a framework that can be actually reused. We are kind of pioneers in a framework that hopefully the effort that we are putting into that will not have to be done by other people that want to replicate the same things that we are doing. So long story short, we would like to see our model replicated all around, if possible, and again, so seeing people taking back, what is ours, actually.
Cool, thank you. Dirk, rescop.eu is already quite a strong network, but what's going to be taking it to the next level for you guys for taking ownership of renewable energy into people's hands?
Rescop.eu, the federation, is setting up services to its members and all the other energy cooperatives that are not a member yet, like you explained about e-mobility. So we want to prevent that everyone is figuring out how a wheel works or how warm water is being made, so we can help them with taking serious steps forwards with sharing knowledge and experiences some of our members have. So we're also working on setting up a mutual of cooperatives that helps starting and growing cooperatives finance their projects. They are facing similar problems everywhere of raising capital from citizens at the early stages of a project. Citizens come when the wind turbines are up and running, and that's a bit late. So we have to overcome this problem. Another, they all have administration, they have IT needs. So by working together, we can help them. So we have to reach out to the part of Europe where we are hardly present, so Eastern Europe. We are trying to help Greece, for instance, to adapt their legislation so that energy cooperatives can emerge. So we have quite a lot of work. We're trying also to, when it's about demand response, smart grid, smart meters, We're participating in European research projects so that we can offer our members the tools, the apps, the hardware they need in future. So it's quite a lot of work, but it's very interesting. We are in an interesting period in history. The energy transition offers us the a chance that we reach energy democracy. It's a chance we, as a citizen, we can't let go. So we have to grab this chance. The energy production comes very close to us, decentralized, smaller, on our own roofs. But if we don't watch out, the big utilities will install these solar panels on our roofs. That's why we have to be present, vigilant. We have to have the tools they will also offer to citizens.
So, Alexa, well, taking into account the atrocious political environment that Hungary is suffering these days, I would like to know how do you plan to keep up your momentum, your initiative?
We've got really inspired by a workshop in Max Frank. I think we, as we see it, and in many other Eastern European countries, that we need to demonstrate that we don't have to wait. I mean, we shouldn't wait for the government to act. And citizens are strong enough to make their own initiatives and provide their own energy. And Friends of Tears Hungary has taken up the role of connecting these local initiatives, energy communities, and also like building their capacity, helping them either with training or with connecting with energy experts or finding them a business model or trying to think about alternative ways of funding. So it's really a very challenging, but a very also very rewarding task to see the this kind of movement growing up in a kind of quite Eastern European country like Hungary. And well, when I go back to Hungary, I will continue to build the cooperation with the municipalities. We prepared a kind of a photovoltaic community power plant plan that can be adapted by the municipalities, and we see municipalities as a kind of actors because they are anyway a kind of community organizers, so we want to involve them into these projects, and they are quite open to get involved, so we see as a potential. And also we would like to expand, for example, the Straw Bay network, also connecting with Just Transition stream that, for example, the Basque County in Hungary, which is a ex-coal, ex-lignite county, We want to show them an alternative, a just transition way where they can actually develop without lignite and without exploiting fossil fuels. So I think there is much to do. And we also hope that within the next 1 year, we can launch either a cooperative or a kind of photovoltaic non-profit company in Hungary that can be the first community initiative actually working and with many members, and we are quite positive that it can happen.
And Lavinia, I'd like to know the short mid-term strategy from TNI. Is your plan to keep an eye in this increasing wave, as you were saying, of remunicipalization all over Europe, or you want to change the focus a bit? What would be the plans, if you want to share them with us?
So the plans of TNI in this field is definitely keeping an eye and collecting more cases of remunicipalization, because the 835 cases are really a first milestone, only the tip of the iceberg of all the citizens, communities and cities that are very unhappy with the privatized public services and want to do something. So hopefully this is some kind of inspiration to get that started. And on the other hand, that we see many public-private partnerships which are the same kind of creature as privatizations in the global south. So in India, Brazil, Nigeria, disastrous public-private partnerships that are only benefiting the private company at the expense of the population. So we want to get a better understanding of what is happening there, because we count more remunicipalizations in Europe, because these are very different contexts. So this is very important to get a better understanding of, because these public-private partnerships are very aggressively pushed for. And these are very often European companies, sometimes even state-owned companies. So this is a big struggle. At the same time, we would also very much like to understand better the new generation of public and democratic locally owned companies, where there are powerful partnerships between cooperatives and local public companies, among public companies, between cities. So these public partnerships or public citizen partnerships, depending on how broad you define public, because we are all the public in a way, are I think very beneficial, where we can combine these strong dynamics of democratic participation in cooperatives with the broader vision for social cohesion and socially just services on a municipal level. So this is something to look into more, and also to finance the green transition. So looking at public and cooperative banks to free and have access to finance to pay for energy democracy.
Thank you. Hector, I want to ask you a question. We've been friends together from working in this beautiful, crazy network of Friends of the Earth in different roles for probably over 5 years now. And I know from myself that there's bits about my job that really inspire me, and there's bits that I find like frustrating and I have to push through and don't make me optimistic about the world. And actually, I have to say that it's these UN conferences on climate that make me not optimistic, and I feel like I'm here with people who are just negotiating the end of the world and looking for the best way to make money out of it. And it's things like the energy democracy convergence where I see that everywhere there is resistance and everywhere there's transformation. That's what makes me have the sparkle in my eyes. How is it for you?
Yeah, when I first started with Friends of the Earth, I remember I used to attend all those COPs, but at a certain moment I'd say, look, this is not my fight, you know, I'm all this gibberish, all these concepts, all this green washing thingies was not really my thing. So I found my place, and what I was feeling really inspired was out there in the streets, taking the streets with the people. And I've tried to keep that the past years. Lately, I've been trying to focus on our potential ways to get more people on board, and how we can share information in a smart way between activists all over Europe. So for this reason, I think that we did a good job with this first convergence, and I hope it's not the last one. I also think that, well, since this year, COP, I mean, despite it's Fiji who is hosting it. It's going to take place in Europe. I think we again have a new chance to take the streets, but not to ask for a higher target or for a super binding agreement, because we know that it's not going to happen. What we need to show is that the real power stays in real people. And I believe that we are the true activists and the ones who are going to be the trigger for the change. So I expect people to take the streets on Bonn and say, look, we are ahead of your negotiations, and that's it. I don't have high expectations for the COP, I have to say, but I do have expectations for this growing movement that we are trying also to build up from here, from Mass Frank these days.
Cool. So unfortunately, tomorrow is the last day of our energy democracy convergence here in Mass Frank. And I want to ask, what ideas and new thoughts and inspiration are you going to take home from this event?
We had an interesting session about energy as a commons and not a commodity. In this workshop, the idea of creating, or it exists already, it's about alternative currency, Bitcoin, blockchain, the fair coin, the solar coin. We heard about it, and some of our members are looking at it, but it might be interesting to have a session where we invite these people who are working on this, and that we see whether the energy cooperatives can, whether these alternative currencies could help us develop the energy transition to energy democracy.
I'm very happy to take back home the very rich stories I heard, especially from Eastern Europe, from Hungary, from Alexa, and also the story from Mineksi, if I say that correct, from Turkey. I found it very impressive how 17 cooperatives have been pushing for legislative changes to get solar subsidies and also to increase the amount that cooperatives and public companies, but especially cooperatives, can produce in renewable energy. So this I will bring home, and also definitely the interest in remunicipalization as a broader strategy towards energy democracy, and where these partnerships between cooperatives and local public energy companies can be really drivers for change.
I also take back home the whole inspiration, hearing all these amazing stories, people struggling to take back the energy from these oligopolies. That's really inspiring. It's like a breeze of fresh air. And you were saying before about that sometimes you get frustrated, and then there are some things that get you back on track, and that was definitely really getting back on track for me in this convergence, and I really hope it's the first of many. Also, in a more maybe philosophical way, I got really inspired by the discussion we had about the commons, and it got me thinking, so what are the commons, what are the boundaries, the whole redistribution of energy and resources, and yeah, basically how to make the transition happen towards what we want to achieve, which is in the end this real democracy of resources for everyone.
So dear listeners, we're recording this and the first energy democracy conversions taking place in Mass Frank. For the past days, we've been hearing stories about remunicipalization all over Europe. Also cases of an open pit coal mine in Georgia, stories about how a renewable or mobility cooperative started, stories about energy poverty or energy sobriety, how Danish people still struggle to achieve democracy energy, and so many other interesting stories. The last question I would like to direct it to Molly Walsh, and it's something that Angel already said, this is the first of many more. I would like to know, once tomorrow everyone is going back home, how are we going to keep this momentum alive? How are we going to keep connected these dots, if they can be considered dots? If you can maybe tell us if there's any chance or any plan to have a second convergence.
It's a difficult question. I think there's a few answers. We definitely want to do a second one of these events with ResCop, hopefully in Italy next year in June. I hope that we'll also stay in touch, that we'll see each other at events. But also, I hope that we'll stay in touch through the friendships that we've made. Because for me, friendships are the glue that we build movements with, and that's what we've been doing here for the last days.
Thanks for listening, and to keep up to date with our network's campaigns, follow Friends of the Earth Europe on Facebook and Twitter, and visit our website at www.foeeurope.org. Get involved with the Friends of the Earth near you by going to foeeurope.org/network. Subscribe to this episode on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you download podcasts. And follow radio stories from around the Friends of the Earth International Network at radiomundoreal.fm. Thanks to Peter Temp for the music, and see you next time. Bye!
This was Friends of the Earth Europe and Real Radio.